Just a few comments, perhaps, on this before I bring John in. Gentleman in the third row there, yeah? They're racing for you.
Thanks. My name's Sean. I'm a local teacher, and I thank Malachy for the question. I'm very concerned about the higher risk of our LGBT young people to substance abuse, alcohol abuse, self-harm, higher risk of suicide. They do worse academically in school. So my question is to Tim and to John, and I asked him this last week at the debate, and he skirted around it, so I'm hoping for clarity, Noel, this time.
We'll do our best.
Our young people are killing themselves, and the Catholic Church is complacent in not rolling out sexual orientation awareness training and gender identity training for the 98% of young people that the Catholic Church educate in this community. And I want to know what is the delay and what plan is put in place for next academic year for those sexual orientation awareness training, gender identity training from the sector organisations. And I would welcome the Minister's new proposals for the homophobic bullying policies in schools, but I would just ask that not to be done in isolation, but to be followed up with sexual orientation awareness and gender identity training for all educators.
Okay, any further...
this question mainly due to religious people. Mm. I was brought up as a Catholic, and part of being a Catholic, I was told, was that it would answer upon the great.
Just hold, tilt the microphone towards
right,
your lips a little more. Yeah,
it would answer all the great problems, issues that arise in your life, and help you to get through them. Now, this particular issue, if I had been gay, Catholic Church will do nothing for me. In fact, it makes things worse. The same, for example, if my marriage had broken up, they don't want to know me if I want a second marriage.
We'll stick to the...
No, I'm just saying...
No, I understand your point.
It's the great issues of life.
Yeah.
The last place you have to go to get some sort of consolation and answers is to any of the main Christian churches.
Thank you for that. John, just on the issue raised there, I mean, there are policies, but are they enough, and are they in isolation? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me come to that point just in a moment, but I think in terms of the debate has strayed into what the churches need to do.
Mm.
The question actually was, what do politicians need to do? And both should be separate. I do believe that you're as the Taoiseach said, he was a Catholic, but he's not a Catholic Taoiseach when it comes to the debate around issues in Leinster House. So I think politicians do have a responsibility and a broader civic responsibility here, because this is not about enforcing any religious organisation to conduct marriages within their institutions. In fact, the law passed in England strictly protects the churches in England that they don't have to carry out marriages within their institutions. This is about civic marriage. Because you're not married in a chapel until you go into the vestry and you sign the wee book at the back and you come out and everybody cheers at you and takes photographs. That's when you're married, under the law. Mm. And this is about marriage under the law, because marriage law was formed many hundreds of years ago, which covers this part of the world in Westminster. It was formed by a group of middle-aged, wealthy men in Westminster at a time which dates back centuries. So laws can be changed, and many laws have been changed, and I believe the laws around this need to be changed. In relation to bullying... within schools, I have committed to, and in fact one of the measures I was taken today in the department was signing off on the next stage of bringing forward legislation and specifically mentioning homophobic legislation within them. It will not work simply on its own. We do need to raise awareness around LGBT issues. We need to raise awareness around relationships within our schools. But I have been in schools where they do it. So it's not outlawed in that sense, and schools through our curriculum can do that. But I will explore further measures as to how we raise awareness of all these issues and how we assist our young people to be better citizens than perhaps some of us were through ending discrimination against anyone.
Yes, Tim, of course you can. Yeah. So there's a couple of issues for you to address.
Sean, thank you very much. I suspect I didn't respond well because, if you recall, it was a very long debate. We were under spotlights and I was saying I was getting very, very tired. So I apologise if I didn't. So let me respond very directly, OK? First of all... I passionately want every Catholic school, since that's the schools that I have some responsibility or influence on, to have a gold standard. in relation to pastoral care of pupils, anti-bullying policies, including having specialised trained staff and awareness among staff and pupils about LGBT issues and so on. So that is why, as the Minister's actually acknowledged, I know that some Catholic schools have proactively got involved in this, but that's why I went to Cara Friend this morning on the back of our debate to actually ask them for help in this regard, and I gave them a commitment that I would, with the bishops and so on, work with them to do precisely what you've asked to do. And they were able to tell me, for example, that they'd been up here in St. Louise's, you know, that they'd done some work here, and other schools, other Catholic schools. So I give you a commitment. I know it's easy, and this is where I slightly going to come to the minister's comment about Catholic politicians and so on, but it's easy just to focus this on the churches, and we have a huge responsibility, and Leslie and I have both acknowledged this, but the state hasn't been, even the education department, under the minister to his credit, you know, he's pushing these things forward. But so we're all learning thanks to the activism of people like yourselves and raising awareness, and this is where the dialogue, if it's genuinely constructive and helpful, but I give you a commitment, I will do everything that I can to try and make our schools gold standard in this regard.
Leslie, just to get you to address the other gentleman's question there about the religion is supposed to offer you succour, comfort, advice and help in all the big issues. And as the gentleman says, if he'd been gay, forget about the marriage for the moment, but he wouldn't have got that. That's not available. The churches are failing young people.
And I have to say that's right, and because we as churches have not yet found a way to express ourselves with enough grace for people to know that despite what we think about who you are, you can still come as who you are and we will walk with you. That should be how the church presents itself, and we haven't managed to communicate that. And there are maybe many, many reasons for that. And the best that we can say at this point in time is that we haven't done enough. We haven't been enough. We have allowed people to feel so bad about themselves that they will self-harm or take their own lives. And that should not be the case, because church people, I believe that human life is precious and should be cherished as such.
I think Noel, just very quickly.
Sorry, Danny.
Yeah.
Was there one down the back there, Bill? Bill, were you... Sorry, Bill, I thought you were pointing out someone to me.
Sorry, it's not on this subject, so can I come back?
Yes, come back, Danny. Yeah. Go ahead. Comments on this before I give Danny the last word, perhaps, on this?
Well, it was just to
have
a word about something that John O'Dowd said in terms of the political influences. And there is a danger in what John has said, or what John implies, that the only people who then will not be entitled to the public square, if you like,
or have
a valid opinion in the public square will be those from a Christian background who have strong views on this. And that, I think, would be a mistake.
That's the danger of where we are.
Okay, no, Malik, just come back quickly for us.
Thanks very much. And some of the assurances were almost reassuring there. I just want to say on this point, you know, the homophobes always said, we opposed decriminalisation. It's the only thing we oppose. And then it was decriminalised and they stopped opposing it. We oppose non-discrimination in goods, facilities and services. That's the only thing we oppose. We oppose non-discrimination in employment. That's the only thing we oppose. We opposed vehemently civil partnerships, and suddenly we don't now. It's always the last hurdle. And, you know, when people have a history of opposing every step towards equality for our community, it's hard not to think that those people are homophobes and transphobes. And I just think there needs to be a serious engagement, and there's a serious lack of leadership from political unionism on these issues.
Okay, thank you.
Can I come back to the thing?
I think we're going to move on.
We didn't mention the gay cake.
The gay cake?
No, but it's important on this issue.
Go on, what's the gay cake?
Okay, look, you know about the Asher's controversy, the cake that the bakery was invited to write the slogan on. You see, and I think it touches, and it's even significant, I'm not accusing you personally of this, but it is significant that the vital point that Danny raised was, you know, not really given the respect it deserves, because it is critical. Christians who believe in the Orthodox teaching of their faith in this area about gay marriage, but who otherwise are anxious to treat everybody with love, respect, kindness, all that, but who in conscience, believe the doctrines of their church to be true. They are the people who are now being put on the back foot, and the Ashers case is a case in point. Can I tell you this, that at the gay and lesbian event, you were there, Sean, the Equality Commission chief executive appeared and made his statement on this for the first time, and I think the politicians should be interested in this. And he said, he acknowledged that...
This is important.
He acknowledged that the Equality Commission, when this issue arose, had several meetings, and they decided that, in fact, they weren't sure whether there was a breach of the equality legislation here or not. Okay? So they decided, and this is a direct quote, they decided to issue a speeding ticket to Ashers. Okay? Now, a speeding ticket means they presume you've committed the offence and they've some evidential base. But it turns out they didn't. And so they issued this legal letter. Now, I would argue if the Equality Commission was genuinely interested in equality, and bearing in mind that the human right to freedom of religion and conscience is an enshrined right of the European Convention and other international instruments, and the right to marry, gay marriage is not...
I thought this was going to be an anecdote, Tim, another 20-minute point here.
But the important point being, the Equality Commission, if it believes in equality, should fund both sides of that case and take it to the courts. The Catholic Church, by the way, didn't oppose decriminalisation of homosexuality.
This gentleman in the green shirt here has been very patient. Go ahead, sir. We'll get a microphone to you right now. Right. Yeah. Come on now, there you go.
I have a question for John. I'm Conal O'Corry, a member of Mary Farr Republican Youth, but first and foremost, I'm a young girl from the city, and I just want to raise a question to you, John, without any beating around the bush, in all sincerity, about the bus campaign for the students in North Belfast. Why hasn't there been a bus provision provided for the students in North Belfast? And more importantly, will there be a bus come the 1st of November for the Gaelic speaking students in North Belfast?
I've met many of members of the Maria Farr Youth Group, and they never beat around the bush, I can assure you. In terms of this issue, dates back to the Tracy judgment, when College Year First, you brought the department to court over transport arrangements, particularly from South Down, but also from other areas. And the judge ruled at that time that the department did not live up to its obligations under the Good Friday Agreement, and the department accepted that, despite strong legal advice to appeal. Now, since then, we have put in the most generous transport policy that any school in the North has in place for College Year First Year for pupils travelling out beyond Belfast. During the time we were resolving that, there was another court case going on where a young Protestant girl had brought the Belfast Board to court over transport arrangements across North Belfast, what is known as hostile areas, and she challenged the Board's provision that they would not transport someone across hostile areas. That wasn't their legal obligation to do that. And Judge Tracy ruled in the Board's favour. So the case wasn't raised with me again until a number of parents in North Belfast have come together and formed a campaign group. They have requested a meeting with me. That meeting has been agreed to, and I'm going to sit down and discuss the matter with them further. And I'm scrutinising it from all angles to see how we can ensure that young people travelling to College Year First Year, that the department is living up to its obligations under the Good Friday Agreement to facilitate and promote Irish medium education. Right. The argument over hostile areas has been ruled against in court, so I'm looking at it from a different angle.
I'm going to move on from that because I'm not sure our other guests would have something to say. No, I think I'm going to have to move on from that. Thank you very much. There's a lady here at the back who... Thank you.
My question's for Danny Kennedy. I think you made a statement in the press today or possibly yesterday in which he's having problems with his budget and he's telling us all now the lights may go off in Belfast and the roads may not be repaired.
Yeah.
Well, I just wondered, actually I could give a bit of advice to Danny Kennedy with his budget problems. There's an ongoing protest in North Belfast that's costing hundreds of thousands of pounds, and I just wondered
What would that be now?
Well, I'm sure you're all aware of Tredwell Avenue.
Yeah,
that very one. And I'm sure Danny's aware of it as well. And I just wondered, Mr. Kennedy, what would you suggest? Could you defer some funds from Tredwell Avenue and the cost that it's costing us all?
Now, Danny has been talking about the budget.
Because I'm sure Danny wouldn't like us to remain in the dark.
Absolutely. there are budget cuts for all departments except health and education. Isn't that right, John?
That's correct.
So, and that's the four. Is it 4%, Danny?
4.4%.
4.4%. So, yes, but take the money away from Tourelle, policing Tourelle, and get it into those electricity pylons.
I'm sorry that your question implies something that is quite simplistic, and it doesn't work that way. And I say that with respect to you. Dilemma that I face and the challenge that I face as an executive minister is that we are now faced with, as a consequence of the executive meeting last week, what's called the June monitoring, that I have to bring into play cuts to the nature of 4.4 on my budget. It amounts to about something like £15 million. It's not a situation that I particularly like. It is linked in part to the gridlock at the top of the executive on the issue of welfare reform and the provision that have to be made if that is not resolved later, and it's kicked down the pipe until later this year, which again I think is a mistake. I think in real terms, that £15 million that I simply will not have available to me will mean cuts in services in both grass cutting and street lighting, in routine maintenance. It's not a situation that I want to.
Danny, how do you decide? I mean, you've got huge budget. How do you decide that it's going to be grass cutting and street lighting which goes?
Well, the current situation is that approximately three quarters of all of those services are provided in house by Transport NI, right? What used to be road service.
Yeah.
That final quarter is done by external contractors. As it stands tonight, I don't have money and will not have money in my budget to fund the services provided by those external contractors. I can't ignore that situation. I can wish it was different, but I can't ignore it. And therefore, to stay within the law and to keep my budget within the law, then I have to take hard decisions, and they will impact. And when lights go out and are not repaired, and when defects and potholes appear and are not addressed as quickly as we'd like, then I think that will impact on services. And there is a huge debate. And I say this to John as part of Sinn Féin, because they're very much involved in the impasse on welfare reform. And political reality has to be faced. Otherwise, we operate what I have described as voodoo economics. You're not living in the real world. And, well, like me or loathe me, I'm trying to live in the real world.
John O'Dowd, you're blocking the welfare reforms which are creating this huge cutback in Treasury funding for Northern Ireland, and you're leading to every department except yours and health into big difficulties.
Well, yes, on the first point, we are blocking welfare cuts. And I don't care what Danny calls it, voodoo economics, whoever he wishes to call it, I don't believe that taking tens of millions of pounds off the most vulnerable in our society is the way forward. I certainly didn't stand on a mandate for it. This Assembly election, or the last Assembly election.
No,
it's worth noting. It's worth noting that Danny's party stood at the last Westminster election with the Conservative Party, who's the very party he's looking to bring in welfare cuts now. And we have the DUP. And we have the DUP playing footsie under the table with the Conservatives now, looking to be in power with them the next time. So that's the battle we're up against here. This is a battle protecting the most vulnerable in our society. And the first question that I talked about, how we reach into unionism, and I said we need to break down the orange-green politics. We need to break down the orange-green politics in this one, because the welfare cuts that are proposed by the Conservatives and Danny and others are telling us to accept will not only affect Nationalist West Belfast, it will affect Unionist West Belfast, Unionist and Nationalist North Belfast, and Danny's constituency as well. So we are standing up to them. The reason why health
But John, do you think the coalition government is going to listen to Sinn Féin? These cuts, you don't have any choice in this. You have to impose them. If you don't impose them, money's taken from the block grant. Everybody suffers. So either you suffer from not introducing or from introducing the welfare reforms, or you suffer from the lack of money, which is penalised by which you're penalised.
Yeah. Politics is about choices. That's if you get into politics, you need to say
politics is about taking responsibility, John.
Yes.
And taking harsh decisions and not just popular decisions.
Yeah, but politics.
Hard decisions, yes. Tough decisions.
And it's not an easy decision to turn around and say that we are not going to accept Tory welfare cuts. Yeah. There is consequences to that. Now, The 4%, 4.5% cuts that Donnie's talking about, he's only facing 2% of the season. I'm not underestimating that. I'm not underestimating that in any way. As a minister who's had to deal with £300 million of cuts to his budget from he's come into office, I know what it's like to deal with the consequences of that. But what he's currently dealing with is a reconfiguration of executive priorities. The reason why Donnelly's budget is less than it was this time last week is because we agreed in the executive to reconfigure £54 million, around £54 million. £20 million of that went to healthcare. £20 million that went to healthcare. So it's not a cut across the board. There's money being invested in this society. Now, I don't know...
John, sorry, for the decision to protect education from any cuts is costing my department £5 million.
The decision to protect education...
It's costing my department £5 million in services.
If the decision to protect education cuts was the right decision, if we are to look long-term at what we want for this society, and as I said, and I said this at the executive, not breaking confidence, if we want to keep people out of the justice system, then we have to ensure they're educated. If we want to keep people by and large out of the health system, we have to ensure they're educated and have jobs and a future for themselves. If we want to create an economy and a stable society, we have to educate them. So it was the right decision to protect education.
Sorry, Danny, I'm going to bring in Leslie here. Leslie?
Sorry, Noel, this is really important.
Everyone's got something really important to say. I want to bring in Leslie, please. You may have a chance to come back. Later, please, now let Leslie speak.
Okay.
I don't know if I have anything important to say or not.
Well,
I'll talk anyway.
What do you do? Do you have welfare reform? Welfare reforms just? Are they fair? Is it right for Sinn Féin to stand against them? Or should Sinn Féin accept that this would be imposed by Westminster? Even if they don't like it, accept it and therefore save us the tens of millions that it's going to cost the budget.
My understanding is that exactly what you said, Noel, if we don't face it in welfare reform, by accepting welfare reform, we face the cuts in other ways. So their cuts are always going to be there. So it's somewhat disingenuous then to present this as saving those at the bottom of the societal pile, about which we should all be concerned. Therefore, my personal view is that Sinn Féin are stonewalling on welfare reform, and it is wrong. It needs to be resolved. Now, having said that, there are other things that people are stonewalling on in terms of political leadership, and they should be addressed also because they are draining a budget, as you said yourself, which is already crushed. And then I would want to go further and say, John, I absolutely agree. If you want to keep people out of the justice system, you educate them. If you want people to offer all that they can to a society, etc., you educate them. But do you need to educate them across all the sectors we're educating them across? We have far too many management structures to take up the money that should be going to the young people. So there are further questions then about the way we construct this society and continue to construct it on separatist lines.
Did anyone mention the Education and Skills Authority? No, not yet.
No.
No. Tim, I mean, you've talked, I quoted at the beginning, the dilemma for Christians is, are you willing to stand up against the crowd of popular opinion for what is right, good, noble and true? Is opposition to welfare reform right, good, noble and true?
And in that regard, Sinn Féin, the SDLP and anybody else who opposes welfare reform have my full and absolute support.
Even with the consequences that it brings to all the departments and services.
Let me explain my response to that.
And you'll have a chance to come back, Danny.
I would say that Danny and John, by the way, that's not a party political point on my part, or indeed a community political point, if you like. It's a genuine, sincere position. Just to say that before the politicians in Northern Ireland got involved in this, I went over with the four church leaders to meet Lord Freud, Owen Paterson, when this was all beginning to unfold. And among the points I made to Freud, and indeed I've repeatedly made to Theresa Villiers, is this, that Northern Ireland, first of all, it is a special case, that the net beneficiaries financially of the peace process are the British government. The money they have saved, the billions they have saved in security savings over the thing. And you must invest in peace and inject money into a place that has the highest levels by a factor of two or three of child poverty, the highest levels of fuel poverty, the highest levels of income, of employment, family, sorry, of families that are partially employed and so on, income, highest level of disability benefit. So Northern Ireland is not only a special case in that sense, but here's where I profoundly disagree with Danny, and I think the unionist people have failed their, or the politicians have, in this respect, failed their own people, because politics is about negotiating in the interests of the poor people in the Shankill and the poor people in Tigers Bay and in North Belfast, where I grew up, as much as it is about anything else. And look at what's happening in the debate in Scotland. The Westminster government is now willing suddenly to allow tax devolution to the Scottish Parliament if they only vote to stay in Britain. I think if the Unionists had united with the Nationalists and the Republicans and challenged the British government, there was an opportunity lost.
And the government might have said, well, what about the poor people of Glasgow? What about the poor people of Sunderland? Yes, of the poor people of Hull? The poor people of all over England and Wales?
The welfare.
Why shouldn't they have a special
case
as well?
I'll tell you why they do. They have the same claim as we do to justice and concern for the most vulnerable in our society. And what's happening, as I told Freud it would, the whole thing is falling apart. It just doesn't work. The architecture is fundamentally wrong, and they're now discovering that as they try to implement it in Scotland and in Britain. But the Scottish executive is playing a united hardball game, with the exception of the Conservative Party in Scotland. And I think our politicians should together fight for all of the people, the common good of all, especially the most vulnerable in our society. We don't have to accept this as if it's a fait accompli.
Danny, come back on that.
Let me say that I passionately believe in the need for welfare, that support should be in place for those who need it and for those who struggle. And I'm aware of people, and I deal with it on a constituency basis, people who are caught in a poverty trap, and I'm not advocating in any way, and the Ulster Unionist Party is certainly not abandoning people who find themselves in that situation and continues to give good support to that. And also at a political level, we've strongly argued at Westminster and within the Assembly here and the Executive here that support should be in place and that support should be proper. We have brought that argument to Westminster. Westminster has now determined. Westminster has made its mind up. Westminster has said, for reasons that Noel has already said about other regions in Sunderland and in Hull and in Manchester and in Liverpool, where there is deprivation as well, that they're not prepared to move any further on this. Now, last week, June monitorings agreed round the executive table. For why? Because of reasons of political expediency between the DUP and Sinn Féin, who ultimately, Sinn Féin, hold out to have John's Department in Education protected as a political deal. As a political deal.
And the DUP's health department.
Yes. I'm not sure that's a wonderful outcome on behalf of everyone and all of the political parties. And remember, it is a mandatory five-party coalition. Let me also say, it's my strong belief that Sinn Féin are not prepared to accept the responsibility of government in Northern Ireland when they know there are negative impacts on things like welfare reform, particularly when their political ambitions are more focused in the Republic of Ireland and achieving either some form of coalition government there or some kind of electoral success. And politics, at its very rawest and its very most unacceptable, I think, is being played here, and I don't think it's fair on those who genuinely believe and who need welfare, those who also accept that there are abuses within the system that need to be addressed, and welfare reform is therefore important. And so those are the real issues here, and there's a lot of pretending been done, and a lot of...
Okay, you made your point, Danny. Let's get some comments from the floor on this. Stick to this topic, please, if we can. Who's that? Somebody? Yeah. Well, I thought you were at someone who was ready to speak, Bill. I'm sorry. The gentleman there in the...
This guy's got a microphone.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Whoever's got a microphone. Go ahead.
Just come back there with Danny said about responsibility of government. Is the responsibility of being a government and standing up for the people that elected you in the first place?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, why would you want to implement these harsh Conservative cuts?
Because ultimately we have to face political and financial realities.
He didn't say he wanted to. He said he had to.
No, he doesn't have to.
Well, that's what the debate is. There's another couple of more comments, please. Yes.
In respect to welfare reform, I think that we have to accept the facts of the situation, which is that there's a direct link between poverty, ill health, poor education. So by bringing in welfare reform, as the Tories see it, does the panel accept, we're simply increasing the ill health of our population. I would much rather drive over a pothole than have my child ill and his family coming up to us.
Gentleman in the white shirt, and then Danny. Go ahead.
Danny Kennedy, it's interesting that you chose to use the word street lighting and potholes and roads.
Well, no, to be fair, that was raised by the first questioner.
I beg your pardon, I probably didn't hear it.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Yeah, lady just behind you there. And then Danny's had his hand up. Magella, Danny.
I just thought, given the underachievement of Protestant working class boys, that possibly education would have been a priority for you, Danny. I think these children are being let down by the unionist community.
Go ahead, Danny.
This is a separate subject.
Oh, for heaven's sake. We'll get to it next, I promise you. I promise. Okay. Any more comments on welfare? We're not going to stick on it much longer. You've already had a go, sir. Sorry. Yes, gentlemen here in the front row. One more, and then we'll move on to Danny's question. He's been busting. I can't wait.
I'm involved in teaching and education. And with regards to the welfare budget, I think the whole aspect of working with people who are suffering a change in jobs, a change in lifestyle, they go into the dole office and they go away, they get a cheque, whatever. They then are asked to go and go to jobs seeking courses or go to job centres. They don't always do that. The whole idea is that these places should be together. They should be all in the one. I mean, I know that the job centres have had various surveys and asked people, how could we improve our situation? Do we have to have a clerk there who writes all the time and someone on the other side of a barrier who shouts at him, perhaps loses his temper? There are not enough people servicing the people who need help. And the help that they need is the sort of help that helps them into changing their employment and getting new jobs. That is somewhere else. The whole geography, the situation is wrong. The education and the facilities that they need should be there at the one place where they go every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, all right. 4 weeks, whatever.
Thank you, sir. We're not going to agree on this, but we've heard the arguments, I think. Danny Morrison, you have a question.
I was going to ingratiate myself with you there by welcoming you back. But change my mind. Want the panellists to suspend disbelief for a second and imagine that they're on a panel in West Lothian in Scotland and they're Scottish and for some reason there's going to be a referendum in a month's time. And I want them to ask or answer this question: what way would they vote in the referendum and why?
Okay. Leslie.
Oh.
Oh, the boy. Presbyterian Church of West Lothian, a witch, your guidance.
My Scottish brothers and sisters are divided on this issue in terms of the Presbyterian Church over there. Personally, I would vote for Devo Max because I do believe that we are the poorer by splitting into smaller units, and I do believe that we are enriched by finding ways to live together. However, I understand the Scottish desire to develop its own identity and to strengthen that identity. So I wouldn't be voting for independence, but I would be very happy for Devo Max.
Okay, John?
Well, if I was Scottish and I was in West Lothian, I would vote yes. But I'm not Scottish, I'm not West Lothian, so it's a matter for the Scottish people. But I think in terms of the relationships across these islands. Independence of any nation across these islands does not mean that we have to be hostile to each other or we have to turn our backs on each other. I believe that we have to look forward or towards a new relationship in what was formerly the United Kingdom, where I believe in the reunification and independence of Ireland. But I believe that the nations that make up this group of islands, Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales, should have a mutually respectful, supportive relationship going forward, but based on the independence of each nation. But that's up to each nation to make the decisions around that. So if I was Scottish and I was there, I'd vote yes, but I'm not.
Tim.
Well, if I was in Scotland, I'd still be a priest, and I would still say that's a matter for individual conscience. But I'll tell you.
Yeah, but what about your individual conscience?
But no. But here's what I do want to say is how much I am impressed by the mature debate that's taking place about the issue in Scotland and indeed in Britain. And I only wish we had the same mature debate here in Northern Ireland about the kind of constitutional future, which is something in the Good Friday Agreement that needs to be debated in a mature, sensible...
Now, look, you're not under hot lights here.
No, hold on. But
you're avoiding the question
again.
Well,
you mentioned lights. I say that because I believe that there's a lot of people who think the lights are about to go out on our Assembly. And I believe that part of the reason is precisely this, that the two major political blocs are still in conflict mode rather than moving on to this. Now, I know there will be exceptions to this, but generally speaking, and I think that
I don't know where you're going with this. No. Would you or would you not? Would you vote yes or no in the referendum in September?
I would say it's none of my business to tell anybody else how to
but
vote.
But if you lived in West Lothian... If you lived in West Lothian...
On a matter like that, that is not a moral issue in terms of the Catholic Church or doctrine. In Ireland, let me be very, very clear. I support a united Ireland as a position of conscience.
I don't quite understand why you can come out with that, but you can't say whether you think Scotland should be part of the United Kingdom or not.
Genuinely, apart from anything else, I don't know enough about all of the ins and outs of it. And maybe I don't know enough about all the ins and outs, and that's why I want to hear from the unionist tradition why they would want me to stay.
You should spend less time in the Middle East and more time in Scotland.
Oh, maybe so. More time at home, resting, instead of being
Danny.
Yeah, well, it'll not surprise anybody, not least, I suppose, Danny Morrison, that I wouldn't vote for independence. I don't want to see Scotland separated from the rest of the Union. I believe the Union brings huge benefits to all its constituent parts. I think that remains the case, economically, financially, culturally, in sporting terms, socially. I think the full breadth of the Union would lose something if Scotland were to decide to opt out and go independent. What I do say is I've been impressed, I think, at the fact that a referendum and a major debate within Scotland has been taking place, and I think they've managed to do it without a ballot box in one hand and the Armalite in the other.
Either side.
Is that it? Oh, sorry. I thought you were pausing for dramatic effect.
I mean, it is a serious point.
No.
There has been no campaign similar to the campaign, the failed campaign of Republicans in Northern Ireland to change the constitutional position. And I think that's a very welcome thing in terms of Scotland. And I just wish that things hadn't turned out as badly as they had for us.
Yes, Danny, but there's also, on the counter argument to that, there hasn't been an armed campaign from unionists in Scotland to maintain the union either.
Lady and seconder.
And this is the point I'm making.
A new question.
We're still in conflict mode.
Next question.
Politically.
No, it's a statement of fact. Nobody can seriously.
Quick show of hands.
Nobody can seriously dispute what I've said. They might like it, but you can't dispute the fact.
It's September the whatever. I can't remember the date of the referendum. 18th. How do you all vote? Who would vote yes for independence for Scotland?
Not a Scots people in tonight.
That's about three quarters. Would you say?
More. 9/10. So
keep them up again. Keep them. It's only a straw poll, but.
Oh, sorry.
Three and a half quarters. Okay. Right, thank you for that. Let's move on, lady in the second row. Oh, sorry, John, just give me 1 second. Go ahead, John. Oh, you've no microphone.
It's coming out.
You've got a preaching voice, you can...
John, you don't need a microphone.
Is this Scotland, John?
Yeah, I find my friends in the Church of Scotland divided on the matter.
Uh-huh.
I would vote no. Because the continuing United Kingdom will be made up of Northern Ireland, England and Wales. And if you don't like a Tory Conservative government and its policies, Mm. If Scotland leave the United Kingdom, you will get a Tory government in spades.
In permanence.
However, John, if...
There's more positive than the,
if, as Westminster,
Conservatives.
If, as Westminster has promised to devolve tax-raising powers to Scotland, why are the unionists not asking for the same powers here in Northern Ireland so we can decide, Protestant, Catholic, Unionist, Nationalist, Republican, about welfare reform?
Well, I think we are. We started the corporation tax, for example.
Well, but they haven't given it to us.
No. Well, not yet.
Be careful what you ask.
All right, we're moving on. Lydia here.
How did the panel view the recent collapse of the reconvened talks on parades, flags in the past? And would they agree with me that the decision by political unionism to walk out of those important talks on the basis of a single decision made by the Parades Commission is a betrayal of the people on this island, both north and south, who overwhelmingly endorsed the Good Friday Agreement by way of referendum? And in particular to Danny, when are political unionists going to get real and get back around the table and start delivering for the people of this region?
Okay, thank you. Leslie, you've spoken about this. You've talked about the importance of local engagement. You've also said that the Parades Commission is an official government body and should always be obeyed. Where is the way forward here?
I agree with you that the collapse of the Hassel-Sullivan process is something of a disaster for us. I'm not sure that political unionism absented itself from those talks on the basis of one decision of the Parades Commission. There might have been rather more to it than that. I also have a suspicion that, Sinn Féin had a sniff in their nostrils that unionism were never going to do the deal and that they just had to sit back and let it happen. So if the debate had got more intense, Republicans might have had problems with it too, and Nationalists might have had problems with it too. I think we need to stop and ask ourselves, first of all, where have we come to? And it seems to me, Tim, you said something earlier about us remaining in conflict mode, and I think we are still in conflict mode. So even when it comes to discussion about these issues, it's about winning and it's about losing, and it's about who's going to win and who's going to lose. And in fact, we've all won already. We have secured a significant amount in this society and we haven't bagged what we've won. So the Nationalist Republican community hasn't bagged what it's won, and unionism hasn't bagged the securities it's got around the union either. Now, nobody's got everything they want. But until we come to a place where we understand ourselves to have achieved something positive, it's much more difficult to go into debate and be generous in a negotiation around parades, etc. But the deal needs to be done, and we need to get it done for lots of reasons. We need to get it done for the people who suffer because of it. We need to get it done because of the drain it is on our budget. We need to get it done because our vision for the future is absolutely skewed by the past. As long as we don't do the deal, we make the past our future. And that's my biggest concern.
Tim.
Yeah, well, I am convinced that we're about to go into another very dark period in the peace political process, the political dimension of it at least. By that I mean I think the graduated response from unionism, this is just a guess on my part, I think it has less to do with the Orange Marches as it has to do with the possibility of Martin McGuinness becoming the First Minister in the next Assembly elections, and a decision that, driven possibly by the loyalist paramilitary elements, that they don't want the IRA as such to have a victory in 2016, and that political unionism is combining to decide to pull the institutions down for a whole lot of reasons between now and then, and that this is part of the graduated response. And we are in conflict mode. That's not to put all the weight on the unionist tradition in this problem. I think we are still in conflict mode, and that until our politicians, there's a famous phrase in the Book of Proverbs, without a vision, the people perish. It's the people who are suffering from this conflict mode. We're going to see an escalation of tit-for-tat political decisions. We had one, was it yesterday, about the event out in
the aircraft display.
For example, who suffered? The ordinary people. Who's suffering in education because the ESA is not going to happen ordinary people. I spent, as the minister knows, with many others in all of the sectors, days and months, as he did himself, in fairness, negotiating all of the new bill, but it's going to come to nothing because there's no political will. I think the people need to reclaim the political process. I think the two governments need to get back involved and the international community, and a bit like the Gaza situation, when all of that pulls back, the thing falls apart. But most importantly of all, I think our politicians need to look at the Scottish debate as an example of rising above the conflict mode, as Leslie said, who's winning, who's losing.
Danny.
For the sake of the common good.
Okay. I mean, let me say, I think the failure of the House talks was inevitable given the outcome that was proposed. It was unacceptable to unionism. It didn't represent fairness in any shape or form from a unionist perspective. I think we need to have openness and transparency, and it was clear, and it later emerged, that almost immediately after the Haas thing, we had the debacle on the OTRs and the fact that Sinn Féin and Republicans had been able to negotiate a secret deal.
Well, that's a whole question on its own.
Well, but it is linked in terms of an issue called good faith, and that when you come to the negotiating table, that you can expect good faith from those on the other side of the table. I think in terms of, and I've heard.
And in what sense do you perceive? Sorry, Danny. In what sense do you perceive Sinn Féin not to have had good faith?
Well, I think they.
You don't think they want to resolve it?
No, I think that hiding behind secret deals and not making...
Well, they weren't hiding behind it. Well, it wasn't their deal.
Well, nobody... I mean, the deal on OTR emerged almost by accident. And I have to say, it didn't leave anybody with an enormous deal of credit, not least... past and previous British governments or indeed Republicans. Now, look, if you want unionism to come to the table and negotiate honestly and openly and transparently, that's a requirement then that others will have to honour as well.
Okay.
And let me also say, I mean, there's some very misinformed understanding here of what's been called the graduated response. Actually, what was the outcome that everybody, or almost everybody, wanted in terms of the 12th parades, particularly the parade at Ardoyne? They wanted a peaceful 12th, and they wanted a peaceful outcome to that. Unionism, in it, by playing its part within its own community, achieved that. Now, if others wanted to see unionism divided and unionism attacking the police and the security forces and bringing disorder to the streets, that might have been an objective that some Republicans might have liked. But unionism didn't fall into that trap. And we're not going to fall into that trap. And unless we get that openness and transparency and make that a real thing in terms of political negotiation, then trying to put unionism in the corner and make them bad boys and force them into certain attitudes is not going to work. Neither is it a recipe for peace and progress and stability. And let me say finally, because again, and I disagree strongly with Tim in his assertion that somehow unionism wants to see the political institutions fail in Northern Ireland. Nothing could be further from the truth, because no party has worked harder, let me say, and no party has it cost more than the Ulster Unionist Party in working to achieve political stability and peace in Northern Ireland. That remains the case tonight, as it has since way before 1998.
John, is it about...
thank you.
Thank you, Danny. Is it about traps and secret agendas?
Well, the OTRs was convenient for unionism as it came after they had rejected Haas. And Volley, Haas was a major compromise for Republicans. There's difficulties in Haas for Republicans, especially about the past and how the past will be dealt with. And indeed, this entire process, often the process is looked at as being a challenge for unionism. From the Good Friday negotiation, from the ceasefire, which was 20 years ago, right through to now, Republicans have been presented with challenges along the road. I, as an Irish Republican 20 years ago, did not envisage myself sitting in Stormont, did not envisage myself being a minister. in a six-county settlement with an all-Ireland arrangement around it. No, that wasn't what I seen myself doing. I seen myself sitting in the United Ireland with a functioning all-Ireland government. I've had to compromise because I believe it is the right thing to do, and I also believe that my values and principles have not been diminished, and my objectives have not been diminished either. I can still achieve a united Ireland.
So the old saw is right that Republicans are too smart to admit they lost and unions were too stupid to realise they'd won.
No, but we have to realise, and I think we all have to remind ourselves of this at times, is that the Good Friday Agreement is the only game in town. That's where it is. And if unionism walks away from the table or somebody else walks away from the table, you're coming back to Good Friday Agreement Mark II. That's where you're going to. That's where it's going to end up. So where I think where we're at this stage is this. And it dates back to the flag protests. And for whatever the reasons why the initial flag protests went out onto the streets, it was taken over by anti-agreement unionists with a strong agenda to remove Sinn Féin and bring down the power-sharing executive. And when you listen to the commentary of its leaders, that's exactly what they were about. It moved very quickly from the flag to bring down the agreement, bring down the power-sharing institutions.
With no support from mainstream political parties, of course.
No. Political unionism has bought into it. Not maybe to that full agenda, but they have followed the negative
John,
elements.
John, how little
of
you understand unionism.
I haven't interrupted you all night.
Go ahead.
The negative elements within unionism are now leading unionism. That's a very dangerous place to go. And I think that we all need to take a step back and say, right, where do we want this society to be? Because I'd much rather be here debating streetlights and potholes and health and education.
Not paying for them, but
debating flags, etc., etc., etc.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so happy to end on such a positive note this evening. We have overrun our allotted time. Thank you very much to our panel.